Hi everyone, welcome to episode 7 of the Odds and Ends podcast. I'm here today with Sam Friedman. Sam is a senior fellow at the Institute for Government and also writes, one of the top Substacks, as well as writing in national newspapers. And I think he is a great commentator on British politics as well as sort of geopolitics, and is unusually willing to say some things he thinks about the future, do some little bit of forecasting, and also acknowledge when he's wrong, which I think is great. Sam, what is your relationship, if any, to forecasting? Do you have a
interest in it? Certainly. I used to work with Dominic Cummings, who obviously was one of the people who made, I think, Super Forecasting, Philip Tetlock, famous in the UK, or as famous as he's ever going to be in the UK. So was introduced to sort of the ideas through sort of talking to him, and read Tetlock, met some other people who were some involved in the forecasting movement in the UK, have sort of always taken an interest in cognitive biases and so on, from a sort of purely sort of self-interested point of view, and I've tried, I think, to without ever sort of becoming sort of part of that world and that community, try to apply some of the basic lessons to the way I think about British politics, especially after 2017, when I completely got the 2017 election wrong, UK election wrong,
What did you change as a result of that?
Well, I think, you know, up until that point, I think I did commentary in the way that sort of most reasonably informed people do it, which is you sort of just look at the news and apply your own kind of worldview onto the top of that, and then sort of say, well, what you think is going to happen. And what I realised with the 2017 election, which I expected Jeremy Corbyn to lose very badly and Labour to do very badly, and they did, they still lost, but they did much better than me and nearly every other commentator expected. And I realised that actually I could have seen that if I'd paid more attention to the data and not just made a bunch of assumptions based on my own opinion and view of Corbyn, and sort of past events that didn't apply this time, and it was there that we did have data that showed what was going to happen and I just didn't pay attention to it because it didn't fit with what I had decided was going to happen. So it made me think a lot more about the process of making predictions and making sure you've covered off every angle and looked at it from every perspective before saying I think this is going to happen. And since then, I've done a lot better, though that could just be luck. I don't think there has been as big an upset since 2017.
With that in mind, then, do you think there's anything... With that in mind, do you think there's anything that, you know, the quote-unquote market, the commentary are getting really wrong here for the next, say, 5 years of Britain? Like, is there anything where you think the narrative is going one direction, but the data or something is leading in a different direction?
I think the EU is probably one where I'm really, I think there's a tendency, I think this is true amongst commentariats in any field, to fight the last war and to look backwards at what happened last time. And I think because a lot of people got Brexit wrong, and because people didn't see it coming, that there is now this sort of incredible caution around sort of thinking about the EU and how we might go back into the EU or go back into the European single market at some point. And there's a sort of belief that the data, which is very clearly showing that people think Brexit has gone badly, including a decent chunk of people who voted leave. And, you know, at the moment that 63% of people say they would rejoin the EU is just incredibly soft, not to be relied on. In reality, it's all much more difficult than that. And, you know, we'll probably never go back. We'll probably stay in more or less the kind of relationship we are, maybe get a little bit closer over the next few years. I think it can move a lot quicker than that. I don't think we will rejoin the EU, if ever, for a very long time. But I think that rejoining the single market or joining the single market will be... if it doesn't happen in the next parliament... will be a very big election issue in 2029 or whenever the next election is after the one next year. And I think it will just happen a bit quicker than people expect.
Okay. So, I mean, that I think starts to get us in a good place then for the discussion. Viewers might be surprised that we're not going to start on what's going to happen in the election next year, mainly because I think everyone can hear that. Everyone can look at the betting markets if they want to see. We may get onto that, but I think the thing that I think we can add most value here is, yeah, what do you think is going to happen in terms of policy that you think is important in, say, the next 5 years, you know, by 2028, by 2030? And I guess I'm going to try and sort of guess what you're saying, write it down, and maybe try and pin you down when I can. But yeah, what is going to happen by 2028 along whatever are the top political axes that you think really matter?
So I think the interesting dynamic in British politics at the moment is that you've got both parties essentially trying to appeal to the same minority group of voters, who are essentially people who could switch to Labour but voted Conservative in 2019. And that group of people is pretty socially conservative, relatively anti-EU, fairly economically centrist to even left, actually, but certainly on a lot of issues is sort of conservative. So and the Labour Party have essentially taken the strategic decision that they can bank the Liberal progressive vote, or most of the Liberal progressive vote, and they don't need to worry about that because those people are going to be so desperate to get rid of the Conservatives, they'll vote with them anyway. So they're being super cautious. And that means kind of a lot of British politics is on stasis. So Europe is a good example, but also something like immigration, something like welfare benefits, all these topics where progressives would be very unhappy with the status quo, but are sort of holding their tongue for now because they just want Labour to win. You're then going to hit this sort of point. Let's say they win the election, which I think, you know, most people would give a very sort of high likelihood to at the moment, including me. There's going to be this sort of pivot. Suddenly they're going to have, you know, potentially quite a large majority. Certainly the Tory party would have lost a lot of seats. They're going to start coming under a lot of pressure to do stuff. You know, okay, you won by being cautious, but now you're in this position, what are you going to do? And the big question, I think, is how cautious is Keir Starmer, the Labour front bench, from winning the election onwards? And I think there's going to be a lot of tension there. At the moment, it's actually quite an easy decision if you're only interested in sort of optimizing for winning the election. You would do what they're doing, more or less. But after the election, you've got this sort of desire to retain electability and desire to retain this sort of sense of being acceptable to as large a pool of voters as possible, including those who have more right-wing views. But also you're going to have a lot of activists, MPs, etc., who are demanding a shift away to more progressive positions. And I think that's where it's going to get interesting. In 2026, we've got the sort of renegotiation of the trade deal with the EU. How hard does he push at that point? Does the single market become, you know, a serious topic of conversation at that point? When we get to the 2025 spending review, which is, how the UK government make decisions on how to divide up money between different departments, how are they going to balance taxes versus very high demands for spending across each of those different areas of policy? And that, I think, is sort of the most interesting question in British politics at the moment.
So I guess, I mean, let's start then. So you think Labour will have a majority? I mean, do you want how to put some numbers on that? If you want, I can just grab some from some betting market. You know, we can do however you want. But I mean, how confident are you?
I'd say of Keir Starmer becoming Prime Minister, I'd say 95%. Like, I think that's very likely.
Wow. Okay.
Of them winning of them winning a majority, I would say 60%. There's a reasonable chance that we'll have a hung parliament where no one has a majority, simply because there are lots of seats held by other parties that aren't Labour or Conservative. So it's relatively difficult to win a majority compared to becoming Prime Minister.
And Is that the kind of key breakpoint for you, or is there other really, you know? So it seems from the story you've told so far, it seems like things are going to be pretty similar until we hit the election, and then there's going to be that breakpoint and maybe a number of others that we could talk about. Or is there anything which you really think the day before the election, if you could send one thing backwards in time, other than, I guess, like poll, other than like stuff relating to poll results, like, was there anything else you'd send backwards? I don't know, US election results, Ukraine war, I don't know, anything
yeah,
else?
Yeah, I mean, I think the big thing that's going to decide whether they get a majority and how big that majority is, if they do get one, is going to be the economy. I think more or less every other policy issue is kind of set in stone. Like, we know the NHS isn't going to be functioning well by next year. We know we're still going to have an immigration problem next year.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of, pretty much all the policy problems we have now are not going to have gone away by next year. You know, there might have been a marginal change that allows, you know, someone to claim momentum. But broadly speaking, we're set in terms of the policy problems. The biggest unknown, known unknown, if you like, is the extent to which the economy will grow in the next year, the extent to which inflation will come down. I mean, it will come down, but the extent to which it will come down, and whether wages will continue to hold above inflation and how much above inflation. The best hope for the Conservatives is essentially that wages stay, they've just now, literally in the last month, gone above inflation. If they can hold at a decent level above inflation from now until the election, which will probably be in October or November next year, then that gives them that's
is that going to happen?
I'm not an economist.
Is that going to happen?
I'm not an economist, and I don't make economic predictions because I'm not an economist. To be honest, if you ask economists, you won't get any predictions out of them either. Like, they've also been like really noticeably repeatedly wrong over the last year. Like, it seems to be economics is like the hardest thing to forecast out of anything, because it's this sort of agglomeration of so many different actions from different people. And, you know, there was the consensus was we'd be in recession by now a year ago, and we're not.
I guess to give economists some credit, also, economists uniquely have everything scored, whereas I think probably many other types of things that people try and predict.
That's,
you know, they do that. Everyone sort of gives them that. Whereas, you know, yeah,
that's interesting.
Okay,
too,
but even then, presumably that information. Yeah, I think I don't disagree on that point. Even then, that information will probably sort of wash out after the election. Right? You, once you know the election results, you really know that stuff. Yeah. What about, say, the year following the election? What do you think are some key breakpoints after that?
This is where this majority matters. If we're in a hung parliament situation, then I think what would happen is that Labour would try and operate as a minority government. So I don't think there would be any coalition. And I'd put quite a high sort of prediction on that. I'd say, you know, if we're in a sort of, we're forking out a bit here.
Yeah.
But if there was a hung parliament, I think the chances of there being a formal coalition are extremely low, less than 10%. Even a sort of deal between, say, the Labour and the Liberal Democrats, I think is, you know, they might have a very, very loose deal, but I don't think there's going to be, Labour are not going to be sort of saying we're going to give away a lot to the Liberal Democrats in order to get their support for the next 5 years. They're going to be thinking, how can we engineer another election in a year's time where we get a majority? Like, what can we do to show that we're in tune with the mood of the people, that we can improve some things, you know, get some quick wins, and get enough trust that we can go to the country again in 2025. So I think if there is a hung parliament, we'll probably get...
So you're also saying that without a majority, you think, and how likely do you think an election in 2024...
So I think there'd be like...
You know, another election before 2026 is...
I'd say before 2026, like a 80% chance. I think it's very likely their strategy would be, we're not going to go for a sort of long-term deal here. We're gonna try and... try and get to a position where we can fight another election. And either way, that means you're then going to get another election, because either they're going to do well enough to fulfill that strategy, or they're going to do badly and the Liberal Democrats and other parties are going to think, great, well, we'll force another election. So I think it would be quite unstable if they don't get a majority. If they do get a majority, you then get into these sort of questions around, that they will then look forward more to sort of a five-year parliament rather than how do we get to another quick election. And then you get these sort of big questions about the EU and public spending become the sort of dominant questions of 2025. So I suspect initially it will be public spending. So that one of the first things they'll have to do is do a spending review in 2025, probably kicking it off spring to report in summer or autumn of 2025. They might try and do it quicker, but I suspect the civil service will.
So let's talk a bit about that world then. The world that they've won a majority. And again, so either what do you think is going to happen? I mean, so you talked already a bit about joining the single market. I sort of guessed you at saying, 60% or something. You feel free to correct that. But, presumably that's pretty dependent on Labour winning. Winning a majority. If they don't win the majority, then maybe like things slide around.
Yes.
But are there other things you think will probably happen in the world where they get a majority?
So I think the sequence is you get the spending review first, and that will dominate conversation first, because that will, what you're going to get is basically every department going, we don't have enough money, we're in real trouble. The Treasury, run by Rachel Reeves, who would be Chancellor in this scenario, saying, you're going to have to suck it up. There's no way. And so you're going to have a very tense, essentially, set of briefing wars and internal battles and disputes that will dominate the sort of front pages. It's quite hard to make, beyond sort of predicting that would happen, it's quite hard to predict what would come out at the end of that process, other than no one will be happy. It's going to be a process. It's going to be a process that people do not think enough money is being. The left do not think enough money is being spent. The right will think too much money is being spent, and every interest group will think not enough money is being spent on the thing that it's interested in, and many of them will have a reasonable case. So I think it's going to be a very difficult process, and. How Labour choose the decisions they make around that, essentially how much flack they want to take from their progressive wing versus sort of centrist right wing commentators, will, I think, be critical in deciding how all of that plays out.
Right.
One thing I probably would predict is they won't go for significant welfare reform.
Okay.
But that they should. I mean, I think they should, but I don't think they will. And I think there'll be a big row about that. But I think ultimately they'll end up not doing that.
So if we say before, 2028, let's say, you think...
So I don't think they'll do nothing. I just don't think...
Welfare reform.
They won't fundamentally...
We're saying huge, really something
they
really
massive.
They won't
tackle any of the sort of substantial issues with the welfare system.
And using sort of 20%, you think? One in five, dice roll of a six.
They won't do that.
Oh, you may think even less than that.
They
will do.
I'd say, like 20-30% that they'll do that. I think it's pretty unlikely. I think.
What about?
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. Immigration reform. That's another one. Housing reform is another.
Yeah.
I don't know, it's something about Ukraine. I guess those three stick out to me.
So Ukraine, I don't think they'll do anything different from the current government. I think their policy would essentially be identical to the current government. They've been more or less said that. Obviously, what happens in Ukraine will affect that, but I don't think the election makes
sense. I think we'll give a closer one to that, because obviously...
Yeah.
As time goes on, it'll be harder to guess what the current government would do. But
I think on immigration is a really interesting one, because I'm reasonably confident, at least I really hope, they wouldn't do they would sort of stop with the Rwanda scheme that the current government is pursuing. So the scheme to deport asylum seekers to Rwanda.
Yeah.
I think they would stop that. So, yeah, put a sort of 75-80% likelihood of that, and probably even more, actually. If they didn't do that, they would be, their own party would fall apart. But they will also want to appear like they're being tough, and they won't want to sort of look like... They will pursue... I suspect they will pursue something fairly similar to what the last Labour government did, which is heavy on sort of trying to send as many people on the process rather than new policy. So they'll try and use the existing process as effectively as it can be to mean that there are fewer asylum seekers in the system than there are at the moment, rather than creating a new kind of approach like Rwanda.
Okay, and then, so you don't, so again, you think therefore significant immigration reform is pretty unlikely. Now, I'm not hearing you sort of say,
Yeah, they'll try and use existing powers and existing sort of policy levers just much more effectively than the current government has. Whether they're able to is a different question, but I think that's what they'll try and do.
Okay.
Housing is a really interesting one because they've gone quite a bit unusually, because as I say, they've been extremely cautious generally. On housing, they've gone fairly bold and said they will do planning reform, although they haven't given much detail about what planning reform, and that they would make it easier to, for local authorities to buy unused land to build housing on, much cheaper for them to do that. Which is a good policy. And they've said they'd build on the green belt, which is, you know, I think much easier to say than do in British politics. And so I think a really interesting one is, will there be any houses built on the green belt by 2030, 2029 is a really interesting question. And that one is probably the... one of the few.
And what do you think the answer is?
One of the few questions where I'm going to go something like 50-50. Like, I genuinely don't know, because I think they probably will try, but the sort of organised opposition to building anything in the UK is so strong that it kind of depends a lot on how they're doing generally. It might just be sort of a battle too far by the time they get there. But it's also so important that someone does it that... It's sort of one of the most interesting battles, I think, that they've decided to pick.
So maybe you sort of think planning reform happening in some sense is maybe point A, but then when we start to try and get to the nitty gritty of like, does something that we consider reform have happened?
I think they'll absolutely try. They'll do a white paper. You know, they might put forward a bill. They'll try and do stuff. They may be able to do the thing that allows local authorities to buy land cheaper, which would be good.
Yeah.
But when you get into the actual detail of saying, you know, we're going to allow people to build on the green belt, we're going to make it simpler, we're going to take away all of the sort of environmental, or at least some of these sort of environmental kind of risk assessments that you have to do before building anything, the kind of really nitty-gritty of the things you'd actually have to do to make planning reform happen, that your position will be very strong, and whether they are prepared to stand up to, you know, particularly the environmental lobby in the UK around things like Newton bat habitats, which sounds like a joke, but like it actually is the thing that stops a huge amount of development happening. I just wrote something on I just wrote something on prisons for my Substack, and the reason we can't build prisons at the moment is all the prisons we're trying to build have been held up by badger habitats. Like it's a genuine issue.
Right. Okay. So then maybe just like, let's sort of cycle, you know, this system is imperfect, but I think it's just kind of, so what you're sort of saying is just saying probably there's a majority. If there's not, then probably Labour are still the largest party, are probably like there's not a Tory government, that's extremely unlikely.
Yeah.
But in the sort of hung parliament case, then there's probably another election pretty soon, in the next couple of years. And then if Labour do get the majority, then, you know, maybe we get something around joining the European single market. That seems, and probably much more likely than many people think, not rejoin the EU. Some attempt at planning reform seems very likely, but whether it'll actually look like something that we describe as significant planning reform is, as I think people who want more housing built in the UK, and probably not huge welfare reform, probably not a massive change on Ukraine, but as we get further out, Ukraine will get stranger, so it's going to be hard to say.
Well,
you know, is there anything, you know, that world that we paint, is there anything that you think is missing from that picture?
One thing I'd say on the single market is what I'm confident of is it will become a bit much bigger political issue. I wouldn't, whether we actually are in
right.
it by the...
You're almost certainly going to say...
I think it will be... I don't think Labour will be able to hold it off as a big political debate, which they've kind of done for now. I think it will be...
So will the single market be a political debate in 2026 or something?
Key,
you think?
Key political debate for that, for much faster than people expect.
For this parliament?
Yeah, in this parliament. Yeah. I think that's what I'm saying, rather than it will actually happen. I think... The timing of when it would happen is very dependent on variables sort of outside the control of British government, particularly sort of how the EU feel about doing that kind of thing. But I think what we do know is that we're going to have this trade renegotiation in 2026, trade deal renegotiation in 2026, and it's going to be very hard, I think, for Labour to fulfil their current plan of keeping that fairly quiet. I think it's going to be, that is where you're going to get a big political push to go much further than they're currently planning.
Right. Okay.
But I think that landscape looks about right. I'm trying to think of sort of other.
You know, I'm hearing you sort of say that big changes, that actually a big shift in many, you know, maybe a big education policy change, a big NHS policy change, all of these things would surprise you.
Yeah, I'm not seeing at the moment anything substantive on those things, which doesn't mean they won't happen. You know, I would be very surprised if there wasn't some kind of NHS reform and schools reform program put forward by the government during the parliament. I don't think those reform programs are going to make much difference to anything, I suppose, is I think they're going to be quite technocratic.
But, you know, maybe if we say 20% on every department, then maybe one of them is going to make a real big difference.
And the other thing you don't know, and I think is very, very hard to predict, is how the sort of current shadow ministerial team will be in government. It's often very difficult to know who's going to turn out to be a good minister. And you will get so one or two of them get into their departments and come up with something new that they hadn't sort of talked about before the election, that might be more radical than we expect. But at the moment, you look at the major policy areas, immigration, crime, education, welfare, NHS, and you think, well, they're going to put forward technocratic approaches to try and improve what we have, but you don't sort of see any kind of radical ideas forming, which is kind of their problem, you know, that it's very hard in our economic and fiscal context, our political and media context, to be radical in the way that, say, Margaret Thatcher was in 1979, or even Tony Blair was in 1997 to a degree, although he was less radical.
So and I think you can beg off this question if you think you wouldn't answer it in other circumstances, so you know, I do give a wide, but something like, I mean, do you have any thoughts on the sort of, I don't know, the competence as seen backwards of this, you know, if Labour get into power? I think, say, my sense is that Tony Blair, you look back and you think, yeah, pretty competent administration apart from Iraq. And then, like, you look back on Cameron and you think, yeah, they kind of, like, did okay, probably less sort of competent on average than Blair was, but, like, then Brexit. And then you have several administrations of, like, generally incompetent, not good at either managing the Commons or putting through policy, or just because Brexit was happening. And then, I mean, do you have a sort of sense of something you could say that you think you'll think by the end? And the answer can be you're not sure. But, you know, I guess I'm going to be surprised by your degree of radicalism. I think I might also be surprised if Starmer turned out to be just like massively incompetent. I think I might be surprised by that. But I don't have much more to say.
Yeah, I don't think he would turn out... I don't think he turned out to be massively incompetent. I think what we've learned about Starmer, which is limited, is that he's very adaptable. He does have that kind of, you know, unsurprisingly, given he was a lawyer for a long time, he has that sort of ability to take a brief and work with it. He's not strongly ideological. So you can sort of see him. Also, interestingly, it's not a point most people have mentioned, he actually was a civil servant. We haven't had a civil servant who was prime minister since Harold Wilson, 50 years ago. He was director of public prosecutions, which is a civil service role. He went to civil service meetings. He sort of has a sense of the way the machine works that most of his predecessors haven't had. So I kind of suspect he'll work quite well with the machine. But he won't be sort of hugely incompetent, and won't make a sort of huge mess of anything. But the interesting tension is going to be the sort of that sort of lack of radicalism in a context in which it's quite hard to make anything work without doing anything radical. Like, what would surprise me is if a kind of quite incrementalist approach to policy and politics had led to a much better country by the end of 5 years. Like, if that kind of moderate approach had led to a much better to us being in a much better place within 5 years, that's what would really shock me, because it doesn't feel like that could be true at the moment. But I could well be wrong about that, because it feels so crap at the moment.
Okay, so you're sort of saying something like, you probably think it's pretty unlikely that he's going to be really ambitious in some sense. I don't know.
Yeah.
But then you think you'll be surprised if that, like, the UK is much better than under that.
Yes.
If he's not.
I'll be surprised if they're able to take a fairly sort of low-key technocratic approach that doesn't involve taking many political risks. And for that to lead to a much more successful country, I wouldn't be surprised if they are forced into greater radicalism as we move through the parliament, because what they're doing isn't working. That's why something like the single market. So, like, at the moment, they're thinking, we don't want to go anywhere near this. It's not going to help us electorally, which is true, it wouldn't. So they're just not going anywhere near it. You can see they get into government and they think, we really don't want this whole parliament to be dominated by Europe again. We're going to focus on other issues that are really sort of key for people. You get 2026, the economy is still sluggish. If the economy is still sluggish, you know, people are unhappy with the state public services. You need more money from somewhere. The pressure then to do something radical on something like the single market becomes a lot stronger than it feels like it's going to be at the moment, I think.
Hey. Okay, that's like painting. Okay, that's like painting like a more of a picture for me. Okay, that's certainly some things I hadn't really thought about. Let me just check on time. Is another 20 minutes okay for you?
Yeah, sure.
Let's briefly talk about this. So we have a hung parliament. Then there's another election. What happens in, you know, election two? You know, this time it's personal.
So again, we sort of gets into these forks again. If Labour have successfully pulled off a strategy of showing that they are sort of in tune with people's interests, and have managed to get a few short-term wins, maybe the economy is doing a little bit better, they just seem more competent and with it than the Tories did. The Tories have sort of descended into a bit of civil war, etc. Now, if their strategy has gone well and they're able to actively call an election, you'd think then they'd get a majority. Which is what happened to Harold Wilson in 1964, which is probably the most similar scenario in British politics to this, is sort of that he got a very small majority and then ran another election in 1966 and won a much bigger majority. I think if it didn't work and they sort of ended up in a sort of fairly disordered way falling into another election because they lost a vote of confidence in Parliament, that's when it gets really messy. That's when you start to think, I don't know what happens to British politics in that scenario, because do you get another hung Parliament? Do the Tories sneak back in? Then it starts to matter quite a lot what they've done in what position. We're not well designed for that kind of situation. We need majorities in British politics. The British political system doesn't, it worked in 2010 with a coalition because Nick Clegg and David Cameron were actually pretty similar. They made it work, but it is that is incredibly, it's the only peacetime example of that happening in British political history, really. It is much more common that when you get into these periods where neither party has a big majority, it just gets really unstable and messy until one party establishes a big majority again. That's what happened in the 70s.
Which I guess I often see as like a bug, not a feature.
Right.
Sorry, a feature, not a bug. But like, better than the US system where people are caught for, 4 or 5 years at a time where no one can do anything. But I agree that it becomes very difficult in prediction. I don't know, maybe you disagree.
Yeah, I think that's right. But it just gets very messy and hard to predict. Like, it's sort of an advantage of our system that it pushes you towards majorities, pushes the voters to make a decision, if you like, go one way or the other. But it does get very messy. It is starting to break down because, you look at up until the late 1970s, you had the two, from the end of the war to the 1970s, you had the two main parties getting nearly all the vote. Labour and Tories got nearly all the votes. So it kind of made sense. You had a two-party system. Now you've got a system in which, currently the two main parties are getting 70% of the vote. In 2019, it dropped briefly to about 40% of the vote. Like, it's much more unstable, the political system, and people are much more willing to vote for smaller parties. But we've got a system that is trying to constrain them from doing, prevent them from doing that and continue to vote for the main parties. But, there's this growing tension between people's unhappiness with the two main parties and the way our political system pushes you towards it. Obviously, that's true in the States as well, but in the States, the consequence of that is the Republican Party has essentially changed from being a different party. Whereas that hasn't really happened here. So it's just very messy, I think, and if Labour don't get to a majority and can't get there even a second time.
So obviously some of that sort of probabilistic flux moves back into the system. We get a Labour government, then maybe we still have some planning reform, there's probably the odds come down. Probably there's no more likelihood of immigration reform or welfare reform. Are there any things in those kinds of worlds, I think, that actually sort of spike up in likelihood? I don't know, some kind of voting, proportional representation, some kind of, something you actually think the Tory party might coalesce behind, something that like a second gasp Labour government would be very difficult. I mean, for me, I'm just going to assume everything would just kind of go back to baseline, back to uncertainty. But I'm just wondering if there's any signals where you think, hey.
In that scenario, I mean, we're talking in a scenario where you sort of essentially have two consecutive hung parliaments. I think you would proportional representation would sort of, because in your second hung parliament, let's assume Labour are the biggest party again. Do they just go back to going to be a minority government? At that point, there's quite a lot of pressure to say, look, you've got to form a proper government now. You have to do it with the Liberal Democrats, the SNP, probably the Liberal Democrats. And the Liberal Democrats will say, we're only going to do it if you give us proportional representation. So it does, I think it raises the probability of of having a referendum on proportional representation or even moving to a proportional representation system, which I think it's still low probability, but it would certainly be higher than if Labour just win a majority. So that would change. And then the sort of dynamic around is first past the post, is this political system viable when it's not giving us a strong result? That you'd get that debate, which would affect things differently.
Yeah.
I also think the more unstable things are and the less Labour are looking forward to a five-year term, the more they'll be tempted to do to put more money into public services quickly. You're thinking then, how do we essentially bribe the voters to vote?
So you kind of think maybe you think a bit that if Labour don't get the majority here, maybe in the short term, public spending goes higher.
Yeah, because if you're thinking 5 years
after the next election,
if you're thinking 5 years, you're thinking, okay, we want stable public finances so that we can win again on a strong rising economy and with things improving in 5 years, we don't need to worry so much about things improving immediately. Whereas if you want to go to the country next year, you need to like give people something straight away. So it kind of pushes you towards, you know, we just spent $10 billion on the NHS. We're going to spend $10 billion rebuilding all these schools if you vote for us. It sort of pushes you towards more electoral considerations. Or you could go down a tax cut route, but I don't think they would do that.
Sure. Okay. I guess, is there anything that you think this kind of discussion has missed? Or that you think, again, anything else that you think that the mainstream discussion of these topics like does miss that it, you know?
I mean, I think
if you were a betting man, what would you be investing your...
There's an interesting, non-likely but not trivial possibility that the Tory party completely implodes, which I don't think is got into mainstream commentary. I've written it all.
Okay.
Which is that they have a really terrible election next year. Like, you know, they win 100 seats or even fewer than 100 seats.
Yeah.
And they essentially end up splitting because the sort of internal tension at that point gets too strong and the sort of anger and frustration within the party gets too strong. And the possibility of winning seems so distant that you might as well go with what you want rather than constrain your platform. So I think there is a sort of an interesting possibility. I'd put no higher than...
Is that a 5%? Is that 1%? 5%, 1%? I mean, like 10%?
No higher than 10%, but is nevertheless real that, you know, the result is so bad for the Tories that they split. And you get a centre-right party and a populist right party from the wing of Conservatives, at which point that changes everything.
Right, okay.
But it's quite interesting.
Yeah.
Like, it sort of assumed they'll come back into it next year and not win, but, like, post a reasonable, creditable performance and sort of lose with a bit of dignity. I'm not sure. Like, there is certainly a chance that will happen. There's a chance, you know, they won't, that Labour won't win well enough to get a majority, as we've discussed. But there's also a much bigger chance than people sort of accept of a terrible result for the Tories.
Right. Okay. Okay. Yeah, that's pretty interesting.
And if you look at Europe,
as I don't know,
the centre right has died across.
Yeah, you get.
Yeah, it's just it's
yeah.
So
yeah,
if we had a different electoral system, that would have happened here. I think it's only the electoral system that's keeping the Conservatives alive in their current forms. That's what makes this question interesting.
Yeah. Okay. So then, I don't know. Okay. So then, also, there's some sort of, you know, if Labour. Yeah, if we have electoral change, which is sort of conditional on Labour, like losing twice, maybe then you think that makes sort of a long-term Tory implosion much more likely. I guess if we move to PR, then
if your interest was
if you want to smash everything,
if your interest was destroying the Tory party, you'd definitely go for PR. The reason Labour don't go for PR is because they worry it would destroy them too, right? Like, I think there's less of a chance. I think there would still be a Labour Party in a PR world, but you would it would be much harder for them to take the progressive vote for granted in the way they can do at the moment.
Yeah. Do you, do you want to, like, what parties do you imagine exist in a, you know, I'm a PR boy in a PR world, like, what do you imagine will be the parties in that world, if you think you still have a Labour Party?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at every European country that who has a PR system, they all have basically the same set of parties in some form or another. They have a radical right party, they have a centre-right party, a liberal centre party, a social democrat centre-left party, and a sort of post-communist left party. Like, that's the spread. We have, a Conservative Party that's trying to straddle the radical right and centre-right parties, and a Labour Party that has in the past drifted over to the post-communist left, has now drifted back to the sort of social democrat centre-left, but is always in flux between those two, because there's sort of always an internal factional fight between those two wings of the Labour Party. So if you had a PR system in the UK, both the main parties would split, and you would get something that looked like, you know, a radical right party, a sort of rump Tory party that might be called something different, that was sort of essentially Christian Democrat centre right. The Liberals would still be the Liberals. Then you'd have a sort of Social Democrat Labour Party and a Corbynite Labour Party, but they could be called something different.
Really? Okay.
British politics would look much more like European politics. So that it does if that happened.
Is that a thing you want?
I support PR in principle, not because it would sort of produce a political outcome that I like. I just think our current system is indefensible democratically. Because it means that such a small pool of voters essentially decide what happened. I think the consequences of having a PR system is that we would look much more like our political system would look much more like European political systems, which are where, you know, heavily coalition based, obviously, but the negative consequence, if you're progressive, is that radical right parties will sometimes be in power. Whereas at the moment you have a Tory party that sort of straddles the radical right, but can constrain it a bit. So it brings that risk. With it.
Okay. As I don't know anything. As you may or may not know, I'm one of these people who sometimes worries about AI. And feels like that stuff is happening pretty fast. Right. Feels like the UK is developing some opinions on that quite quickly, about sort of having big conferences. I mean, do you take any positions on that? Do you think there's anything that's like that's over or underrated in that kind of discussion of AI progress? Do you see it likely to be a national political issue as opposed to kind of a sort of throwing things sideways sometimes?
So, I mean, you know, not more about AI than I do. And I'm very cautious about sort of speculating in areas where I don't know much about. My sense is that the UK government can do fairly little about any of it. You know, Sunak is trying a bit. He's holding this summit, but if you look at what the UK is actually doing, it's pretty insubstantial compared to what's happening in America and China. So I kind of think this is one where what British politics thinks of it doesn't really matter very much, unless it can take a very outsized role in pushing other countries to engage with the risks more. And that's what Sunak's strategy essentially is, trying to create a forum for that discussion. But on its own, Britain, there's very little Britain can do. So it's kind of going to be the interesting question, and I'm not qualified to answer it, is what is the effect of AI going to be on things like the economy and health services, et cetera, over the next 5 years? And I don't know. I mean, if you could, from the things that you read, it could either be nothing or it could be a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that just, I don't know, it's a trite point, but it just raises the sense, the fact that kind of we're talking about this model, and I guess we've raised one thing, the single market, that we think might be a lot bigger than people think it's going to be, but there's room for anything outside of the model, whether that's China, Taiwan, whether that's the Ukraine war, whether that's, I don't know, India-China relations.
The other one is climate change, right?
Something about Africa, you know, 5 years is a long time.
I mean, climate change is the other one we knew. It seems to be happening, again, I'm not an expert on climate change, but it seems to be happening in a sort of fairly non-linear way. Like, this summer was a lot hotter than any previous summer. If you start to see very strong non-linear effects around climate change, and it gets very, very obvious this is getting bad much faster than perhaps the mainstream predicted, that could dominate a parliament in a way that at the moment it wouldn't look like it would. Clearly it's an issue, it's a big policy seen over the summer, it's been talked about a lot, but you wouldn't imagine it dominating the next parliament right now, but you could certainly see a world in which it did. I think, AI is another one, Ukraine, as you've said, China, Taiwan. I think, the other question about China is what's going on with their economy, which, they keep stopping publishing economic data, so it's like really hard to tell what's going on. Like, how bad a position is their economy in? What's the likelihood of the Chinese economy going properly tits up at some point in the next 2-3 years? Now, if that happens, we're in real trouble. Another one, obviously, is Trump winning again. Like, what happens to the States if Trump wins again? Yeah. I'm sure you'll have another episode on that. But from British politics is obviously affected, like everyone is, from the wash of American politics. If that happens, God knows what he's going to do. And that has all sorts of consequences for British government. So you're right. This is in the context of what we know, but there are lots of things that could change it.
Whereas there'll be a different discussion will be, asking every one of those exogenous questions, saying if recession, if this, if that. Okay. Well, Sam, it has been a real pleasure. I read your Substack. I would recommend people subscribe to it. It is one of my one of the few Substacks I read, I think, on British politics with any regularity. Thank you for being brave enough to put some concrete predictions down. I guess we should revisit this in 5 years' time and see how it looks.
See how it's all wrong in a few years.
But thank you so much for your time.
No worries. Thanks very much.
Well, it's definitely going to be wrong, but the question is how.
How wrong in what ways? Yes.
Yeah, thank you so much. And sorry, you go.
No, I was just saying thanks.
Great. Well, everyone have a lovely week. Bye.